Welcome back. Sorry about that abrupt ending to the last segment, but had a little technical difficulties here, off-site, not in the studio. But we're back. My guest, Julia Parker, Director of Operations, Santa Barbara Wildlife Network. So to clarify, my original question was, how long has the Santa Barbara Wildlife Network been in existence? And that's about 32 years?
Correct. Yes, we incorporated in 1988.
Okay. And you've been there since 05, prior to that with the zoo.
Right.
Okay. Well, I like what you're doing much better than the zoo.
They're both very great. They're both great places to work.
And we were, prior to that, we were talking about how the Santa Barbara Wildlife Network needs volunteers. If you want to answer the phone, if you want to go out there and do some work, learn about animals. And we're going to talk about even more opportunities because they have a big fundraiser going on and a new project, but you can reach them at 805-681-1080, 805-681-1080, Santa Barbara Wildlife Network. So we're talking about the different animals that you take care of and what you do. And that kind of dovetails, if you don't mind the pun, into... you know what? Before we get away from the mallards and my Carl's Jr. story, I was, you know what Nextdoor is? That online neighbor
yes.
thing? And somebody was complaining about crows. I just read about it.
Give them our number.
And go, so how do you get rid of the crows? And someone said they had a fake crow. Can you put a large fake crow, and that would scare away other crows?
Probably a blow-up owl might be a little bit more effective, but you'd have to move it around continually because they're going to figure out that it's not real. That's how smart they are.
Well, and the problem is that I actually have a plastic owl that I keep on the side of the house because I didn't want the birds perching up on that side of the house, and I used to move it all the time, but I haven't. And but I don't want to scare away the songbirds. But apparently someone mentioned tape, bird scare tape that's used in vineyards to keep the starlings.
Mm-hmm.
You know about that?
Yeah, something that blows like a ribbon, you know, that can blow in the wind. One of my neighbors used to use the old pie tins, and he would put a hole in them and hang them in his fig tree because he didn't want the birds eating his figs.
And just that little movement, it gives them pause and they fly off. They don't. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that could be a deterrent.
There was another next door problem with people having ducks come into their swimming pool.
Oh, yes, that's
pooping,
a big one.
Pooping in the pool.
What people don't realize is many people with pools and nice gardens in their yard all of a sudden will have a mother mallard with, you know, 12 baby ducklings in their pool. All of a sudden, and they never noticed where the nest was because they're well hidden. And the best thing to do is just create a ramp for the mother and the baby ducklings to get out. The mother can fly out, but the baby ducklings are too small. They don't fly yet. And so if you just allow them to get out by draping a towel over the edge of the pool or maybe use some of your patio furniture, making even a piece of wood and making a little ramp, then... Also give them access to get out of your yard, like open the gate and let the mother take the ducklings where she was intending to take them.
They didn't figure that out. They didn't.
Yeah.
She built a nest in an enclosed yard, and it takes a while for these ducklings. And we're talking about that crow. I mean, a crow was huge. I would never have guessed. And Liz had suggested I take a close-up photo so she could see the size of the feathers.
Right. Yeah, the babies are almost, the baby birds that are fledglings that live on the ground after they jump out of the nest at about 3 to 4 weeks of age, they all live on the ground for 1 to 2 weeks. And people often don't realize that they're fledglings or immature birds because their body size is big, but their feathers haven't fully grown out yet, so they can't fly. And the parents do feed them on the ground, and... if you're just patient and, you know, make sure they're in a safe place, maybe keep your cat and dog inside for a little while, then the birds can fly off with their parents. And we don't really want people to bring every fledgling in oftentimes they think they're injured because their body is so big and they don't realize that it's a developing bird. So we only want them to, you know, call us if it's injured, orphaned, but they can always call us for information. So we can often have them send us a text of the bird or the animal, or send out a volunteer to check it out and see if it really is an animal that needs to be brought into care.
You know, this little moment right here is worth the whole interview, because I've lived my whole life. I never knew that. I thought the birds were in the nest and they flew away. I've never seen little birds on the ground. This was the first time I saw a bird on the ground that really, calling it a fledgling, this crow, and I thought it was injured. And that's why I called.
If they open their mouths and their mouths are pink and they have blue eyes, then they're a fledgling. The other way to kind of judge the age is by the length of the tail feathers. So under 4 inches, it's most likely a fledgling. And usually when they're on the ground, the tail feathers are 3 to 4 inches long. But sometimes with our, you know, windy April weather, birds will get blown out of the nest or knocked out of the nest by a sibling, or maybe even predated. The nest might be predated by another bird and they might knock out the baby. So then you have a baby crow on the ground with a 1 or 2 inch tail, and that just means they're going to be on the ground for a lot longer than 1 or 2 weeks until they can fly. So if they're not in a safe place and the parents aren't being diligent about protecting them and feeding them, then we might ask you to bring that bird in.
Yeah, that's what my sibling did to me, kicked me out of the nest. And when you're talking about these tail fin tails, about it should be more than 4 inches, we were talking about the crows.
Yes, yeah, the crow's tail feathers. Sometimes it's a little bit hard to ascertain that because, you know, their wing feathers kind of go into their tail. The primaries kind of cover up their tail feathers sometimes. But, you know, you can always bring the bird in and we can examine it. And then if it doesn't need to be with us, we'll send it back home to its family with you.
Well, but you try to, you know, hopefully on the phone, you can educate someone to let them know that this bird isn't injured. It's just it's a fledgling. It just hasn't learned to fly yet.
Right.
And then you just want to leave it alone, because otherwise you're taking away from its parents. As much as I hate the crows, I have to admit I saw them once, two on the line, and it looked like a Disney movie, the way they were, you know, cleaning each other and chatting away. It was quite remarkable. My guest is the director of operations at the Santa Barbara Wildlife Network, and they are located on Fairview Avenue. Their hotline phone number is 805-681-1080, 681-1080. And we will get to the fundraiser that's going on, because they're going to be doing a big expansion coming up, trying to raise a lot of money. But immediately, always need volunteers to either answer the phone, or if you're interested in animals, you probably can do some work right out there. I did once bring in a injured hummingbird. And I learned that if you do find an injured bird, you want to gently catch it, maybe with a towel, and put it in a box and cover it. And don't feed it water or any food. Just keep in the box dark so that it thinks it's at night, so it won't run around and injure itself, and then take it in. Is that good advice?
That's correct. We want to keep them warm, dark, and quiet until they can be brought in, so that reduces stress. And we don't want them to get wet. A lot of times if you put water in the box, they, you know, spill it or they jump into it, and that just adds, you know, another danger of them getting cold.
Right, right. And so you mentioned the mallard in the pool, and then we were talking about buying, if you don't want birds in your yard at all, there's a bird scare tape. It's just something to flutter in the wind to keep them distracted for some reason. I've got that fake owl, but I haven't been moving it, so that's not doing much good. But someone, I brought up the mallards, ducks in the pool, and you said if you see a bunch of baby ducks in the pool, to give them a ramp to get out of the pool, because they might not be able to get out of the pool. So that's a great tip. Either a towel or a piece of wood or some kind of furniture, just give them the ability to get out of the pool. And but the people on next door suggested they want the birds in the pool, or the large ducks, so they said get a blow-up alligator.
Any kind of pool toy, you know, floating toy, those noodles, that could detour them from going into the pool.
Oh, yeah. Someone said something else. Just some kind of little activated motorized thing that just kind of creates action in the pool. Mm-hmm. They're not going to really want to deal with that. Let's see. We did fledglings. We did crows. I love my little songbirds. I've got this beautiful bird bath. I keep fresh water in it. And when I see a crow out there, I'll knock on my window and they'll fly away. And so now I pretty much train them. They know they're not welcome in my yard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know, I want to get some bird feeders out there. I was at a friend's house and she had something, it looked like a cylinder with a little bit of a bowl on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the best thing for songbirds?
Yeah, that'll work. It's important to clean them out regularly, though, with a dilute bleach solution. And same thing goes with your bird bath, because those communal feeding centers can be an area where disease can spread. So we just want to keep them clean.
I take the hose and I kind of flush it out and spray it. So I try to keep fresh water every day. I kind of give it a little shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old bird feeder. It's metal and mm-hmm. It's kind of rusted. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, you might want to put a plate in it so then, you know, they're not going to be ingesting the rust. You know, just get a decorative plate or a pot, maybe one of those trays you put under a pot to catch mm-hmm. the water, and you could put that on the bird bath, something that is a little bit easier to clean or disinfect.
Well, you know, I eat off of cast iron skillets. I think a little iron is good for the birds, isn't it?
Well, you never know. It might not be too bad.
Iron is one thing, rust is another. The water is very clear, though. The water mm-hmm. is clear.
That's good. Changing it every day is very good.
Yeah, I change it and I squirt the hose in it, so I kind of wash it out. And I will, you know, what I should do is get some kind of product and paint the inside and
mm-hmm. kind of something. Yes, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because it's so pretty. It's an antique. Bird bath. It's got two little metal birds perched on it. It's really cool. So I don't want to, but I'll fix that. My guest, Julia Parker, Director of Operations, Santa Barbara Wildlife Network. So last couple of minutes here, tell us about, you know, you've been operating for so many years and now you actually have an on-site veterinarian.
It's very, very exciting for us. In April, we hired our first veterinarian, Avery Berkowitz. And hopefully this fall, we're going to be breaking ground for our wildlife hospital building, which is very, very exciting for us. And we'll have surgery, exam room, x-ray room, larger rooms to wash oiled birds in case of an oil spill or to deal with the natural seepage that, you know, commonly occurs in this part of California. And the building's going to be almost 5,000 square feet. And we're just, we couldn't be more excited about it.
Now, I spoke to your executive director, Ariana Kanovich, and we'll probably have her on as we get a little closer, but you definitely need big time money. She said you have a $2.5 million matching grant if you can raise $2.5 million to match it. And you have raised $1 million so far. So you actually need another $3.5 million is what she told me.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because the total cost is $6 million. So you got the $1 million, and so you need to get the $2.5 million to match the $2.5 million. So there you go, and you got the $1 million. So
donations are welcome. If you can't help, come in and feed baby crows or do duckling care or help prepare diets, you can always send us a donation for our wildlife hospital.
That's great. I hope you can get some donations. He's just taking care of these little unfortunate little animals and birds, and we don't want to see them suffer. And thanks for jumping on. Julia Parker, Director of Operations, Santa Barbara Wildlife Network, 805-681-1080, 805-681-1080. I'm glad you got out of the zoo. I'm not a big fan of the zoo. I don't
oh,
like crows,
really,
and I don't like the
zoo. It's
a
great place. I know some people have issues with animals that are in a cage, but their enclosures are about as natural as they can be. And breeding animals in captivity is, you know, might be the only way to save them, because the wildlands are not available to them due to various reasons.
Well, I'm glad I gave you the opportunity to give that a plug and defend them and give the other point of view. I guess it is controversial, but we love the Santa Barbara Wildlife Network. Julia Parker, thanks for coming on. I appreciate the information.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, we'll talk to you again.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. And thankfully, I finally have time to read the poem that was published on March 30th, 2005. Naomi Ruth Levy passed away 84 years old. And I mentioned she was born, she had a visual impairment, and she was blind. She didn't turn blind until she was age 70. But she had written a lot of poems, and this poem just touched my heart. It's called The Garden of My Heart, and it ends with the line, "In the garden of my heart." Okay, here it is. "There is a lovely garden that blooms within my heart, a lovely sort of garden from which no flowers depart. Even in the snow of winter, my garden's blooming fair, for mine are not the blossoms that fade with frosty air. No, these are nicer flowers than any else that blow. They are the flowers of the souls of friends I once did know. Of friends who left a memory when life's pathways must part. But they live on forever in the garden of my heart."